I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. My name is Duncan Ferguson. I will be your worship associate today. Our minister, the Reverend Lisa Day, will be our worship leader, and our worship religious education and covenant group theme for September is Building Belonging. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of all people of all races, all genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. Today's chalice lighting words are by Lisa Garcia Sampson. The Great Turning. In these wild, historic, and uncertain times, we gather to remember who we are, who we belong to, and what we are called to do. As we light this chalice, we kindle the spirit of the Great Turning. The spirit of the Great Turning, the movement for justice alive in this nation today. May we feel it in our bones. And in the stillness of this hour, may we sense it calling our name.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. The words of meditation this morning from David White. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you are alone, as if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely, even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants you freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and invite you. And the tiny speaker in the phone is your dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and seen the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything is waiting for you. Our first reading this morning comes from Dr. Vivek Murthy, the 19th and 21st U.S. Surgeon General. It's a letter from the beginning of the 2023 report, Our Epidemic of Loneliness and Isolation, the U.S. Surgeon General's advisory on the healing effects of social connection and community. When I first took office as Surgeon General in 2014, I didn't view loneliness as a public health concern. But that was before I embarked on a cross-country listening tour where I heard stories from my fellow Americans that surprised me. People began to tell me that they felt isolated, invisible, and insignificant. Even when they couldn't put their finger on the word lonely, time and again, people of all ages and socioeconomic backgrounds from every corner of the country would tell me, "I have to shoulder all life's burdens by myself," or, "If I disappear tomorrow, no one will even notice." It was a light bulb moment for me. Social disconnection was far more common than I had realized. In the scientific literature, I found confirmation of what I was hearing. In recent years, about 1 in 2 adults in America reported experiencing loneliness. And that was before the COVID-19 pandemic cut us off from so many friends, loved ones, and support systems, exacerbating loneliness and isolation. Loneliness is far more than just a bad feeling. It harms both individual and societal health. It is associated with a greater risk of cardiovascular disease, dementia, stroke, depression, anxiety, and premature death. The mortality impact of being socially disconnected is similar to that caused by smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day, and even greater than that associated with obesity and physical inactivity. And the harmful consequences of a society that lacks social connection can be felt in our schools, workplaces, and civic organizations, where performance, productivity, and engagement are diminished. Given the profound consequences of loneliness and isolation, we have an opportunity and an obligation to make the same investment in addressing social connection that we have made in addressing tobacco use, obesity, and addiction crises. This Surgeon General's advisory shows us how to build more connected lives in a more connected society. If we fail to do so, we will pay an ever-increasing price in the form of our individual and collective health and well-being. And we will continue to splinter and divide until we can no longer stand as a community or a country. Instead of coming together to take on the great challenges before us, we will further retreat into our corners, angry, sick, and alone. We are called to build a movement to mend the social fabric of our nation. It will take all of us. Individuals and families, schools and workplaces, healthcare and public health systems, technology companies, governments, faith organizations, and communities working together to destigmatize loneliness and change our cultural and policy response to it. It will require reimagining the structures, policies, and programs that shape a community to best support the development of healthy relationships. Each of us can start now in our own lives by strengthening our connections and relationships. Our individual relationships are an untapped resource, a source of healing hidden in plain sight. They can help us live healthier, more productive, and more fulfilled lives. Answer the phone call from a friend. Make time to share a meal. Listen without the distraction of your phone. Perform an act of service. Express yourself authentically. The key to human connection are simple but extraordinarily powerful. Loneliness and isolation represent profound threats to our health and well-being, but we have the power to respond. By taking small steps every day to strengthen our relationships and by supporting community efforts to rebuild social connection, we can rise to meet this moment together. We can build lives and communities that are healthier and happier, and we can ensure our country and the world are better poised than ever to take on the challenges that lie ahead. Our future depends on what we do today. And from poet Richard Blanco, Declaration of Interdependence. Such has been the patient sufferance. Were a mother's bread, instant potatoes, milk at a checkout line, where her three children pleading for bubble gum and their father, where the 3 minutes she steals to page through a tabloid, needing to believe even stars' lives are as joyful and bruised. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. We're her second job, serving an executive absorbed in his Wall Street Journal at a sidewalk cafe shadowed by skyscrapers, where the shadows of the fortune he won and the family he lost, we're his loss and the lost. We're a father in a coal town who can't mine a life anymore because too much and too little has happened for too long. A history of repeated injuries and usurpations. Where the grit of his main street's blacked out windows and graffitied truths, where a street in another town lined with royal palms, at home with a Peace Corps couple who collect African art. We're their dinner party talk of wines, wielded picket signs, and burned draft cards. We're what they know. It's time to do more than read the New York Times, buy fair trade coffee and organic corn. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress. Where the farmer who grew the corn, who plows into his couch as worn as his back by the end of the day, where his TV set blaring news, having everything and nothing to do with the field dust in his eyes or his son nested in the ache of his arms. We're his son. We're a black teenager who drove too fast or too slow, talked too much or too little, moved too quickly but not quick enough. We're the blast of the bullet leaving the gun. We're the guilt and the grief of the cop who wished he hadn't shot. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. We're the dead. We're the living amid the flicker of vigil candlelight. We're a dim cell with an inmate reading Dostoevsky. We're his crime, his sentence, his amends. We're the mending of ourselves and others. We're a Buddhist serving soup at a shelter alongside a stockbroker. We're each other's shelter and hope. A widow's 50 cents in a collection plate and a golfer's $10,000 pledge for a cure. We hold these truths to be self-evident. We're the cure for hatred caused by despair. We're the good morning of a bus driver who remembers our name, the tattooed man who gives up his seat on the subway. We're every door held open with a smile when we look into each other's eyes the ways we behold the moon. We're the moon. We're the promise of one people, one breath, declaring to one another, I see you, I need you, I am you. Here end the readings. If I had a do-over on this morning's sermon title, I'd choose, Not All Belonging is Solve. That profound truth comes from New York Times bestselling author of Black Liturgies, Cole Arthur Riley, who wrote, I'm beginning to think alienation and rejection are the two great persuaders of our unloveliness. The cunning will wield them against you so that you acquiesce to the systems of a community in order to retain membership in it. Perhaps you know what it's like to need to believe a certain doctrine or creed so that you can belong to in a spiritual space, or to vote a certain way to belong at the dinner table. When someone places your very belonging at stake, they are prodding an ancient wound. Not all belonging is salve. Not all belonging is salve. Congregational ministers aren't supposed to say things like that. We're supposed to encourage belonging, belonging to our congregations and to small groups within our congregation. We're supposed to say belonging matters. It adds depth and meaning to our lives. It holds us in care and in love through all the seasons of life and all the chances and changes of fate. It strengthens our individual efforts toward justice building. It allows us to give and receive so many more of life's gifts than we could or would all on our own. Belonging is good for us, we social creatures. That's what we're supposed to say, and I often do. Nevertheless, not all belonging is salve. Consider the sitcom episode, you probably know the one, in which one character desperately wants to be admitted into some exclusive group, a fraternal organization, a country club, or a high society committee. The character begs a second reluctant character into applying for membership along with them. Perhaps they've been told by the selection committee that their application will be considered only if the second character also applies. Or maybe they simply want their friend along for the ride. Either way, even if you've not seen the episode of Designing Women or the Andy Griffith Show or some other sitcom produced in the last 40 years, you know how it turns out. After the interviews and the meet and greet, reluctant second character is invited to join the coveted exclusive group, but first character is not. And of course, whether it's Julia Sugarbaker defending her baby sister Suzanne or Andy watching out for Barney, second character turns down the invitation to membership. If the group won't accept their beloved, they won't have anything to do with the group. Belonging isn't a salve under these circumstances. Belonging in these circumstances is an irritant, a queasy stomach, an uneasy conscience. It's easy because we all want to be good friends and partners and family members to those we love, to imagine ourselves being second character, the one who doesn't want to belong to any club that won't have their friend as a member. Perhaps we've even been in that situation. Leaving a group of friends when members begin to speak disparagingly of a race or class or group of people we hold dear. Resigning membership in an organization after it has issued public statements or enacted policies that denigrate, disenfranchise, or refuse admittance to the LGBTQIA community or people of color or immigrants or women. Many of the friends, colleagues, and classmates I follow on Facebook, case in point, have been shedding friends or inviting followers and friends to shed, unfriend, or unfollow them. They're doing so publicly, explaining that they can no longer accept as friends those who spew hatred toward trans, immigrant, Black, brown folks, or who vocally support expressions of such hatred from public figures and elected officials. If you're on social media, you may have noticed a similar trend or participated in the practice yourself. Lots of people seem to be choosing not to belong in relationships, even just social media-based ones, that wouldn't welcome the belonging of whole groups of people based on one aspect of identity, not on lived experience or personal encounter with the people they are excluding. It's easy, or at least easy-ish, to recognize that belonging to such organization or friendship or social media circles is not salve, even if we're deeply lonely and longing for connection. But what about a club or organization friendship circle, or church that won't have us in our whole holiness as a member? Are we then prepared and able to say, if you don't want all of me, I don't want to belong? What about a Unitarian Universalist church that welcomes our belonging as long as we never admit to missing the Eucharist or leaning conservative in our politics? What about the school system that says your education, experience, references all top rate? We'd love to hire you. Just never let a hint of your sexual orientation reach your students, their parents, or your colleagues. What about the family that says, we'll love you and support you and include you as long as you keep your relationship with that person hidden, unacknowledged, and far from our dinner table? Surely belonging is not solved in those situations. Surely it is slow poison. But loneliness is epidemic in our society. Sometimes, if the choice is between isolation and belonging somewhere where we have to deny or bury or mask parts of ourselves, we might well choose partial belonging over not belonging at all. I think we've all probably made that decision at least once in our lifetime, whether joining a clique in middle school or remaining in a relationship with a primary partner who denigrates our ethnic identity slyly, subtly, but regularly, or when going along to get along means closing our ears and our hearts to frequent microaggressions from a best friend's new spouse. When the alternative is health-destroying, spirit-destroying loneliness, choosing to belong at the expense of our whole authentic self can feel like the better of two very bad options. I haven't entered last week's fish comments into a word cloud generator yet, but I can tell you that when I do, the largest word will be connection. Many of us named some version of it, fellowship, friends, beloved, as the thing we look for or forward to when we come to church on Sundays. Knowing the statistics that even before the COVID shutdown, 1 in 2 adults in the U.S. reported loneliness, I am grateful that belonging to this congregation seems to be salve for great numbers of you. The world outside these doors is more determined than ever, in the language of Cole Arthur Riley, to wield alienation and rejection against us, convincing us over and over again of our unloveliness in order to keep us acquiescing to systems that serve forces of control, division, and greed. Whether we've been here 30 years or 6 weeks, we're here because we've come to know this to be a place that recognizes and celebrates our loveliness, a place to bathe our spirits in the salve of belonging. We're at church, this church, most of us, only an hour or two, one day a week, however. So in today's world, such places and hours as this are rare. And we need that salve of belonging here to be potent, fragrant and melodic, soothing and invigorating at the same time. 10 new people have signed our membership book in the past month alone. Our neighbors, our friends, like we ourselves, yearn to be able to choose belonging over not belonging, secure in the knowledge that when they do so, they will belong in their magnificent and particular wholeness, and it will be a salve to their parched spirits and chafed souls. That's why we're talking every single week about what it means to live with love at the center. That's why we're creating a new covenant together. That's why we're gathering your thoughts and ideas about what you're looking for when you come to church and what you promise and expect from the church. And that's why we're starting a new covenant group or two this afternoon. We're doing everything we can to deepen and broaden an expansive and welcoming experience of belonging here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah, not simply that we might surrender ourselves into its embrace for a time on Sunday mornings, but that we might carry it forth with us as antidote against loneliness for ourselves and all whom we encounter throughout the week. And thus, may this congregation be a salve, a blessing, even unto those who never enter our doors. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.